Host and producer Rosana Longo-Better speaks with Cipriano Ortega, an indigenous multidisciplinary artist and musician whose work has been organized nationally and internationally.
You are listening to A Public Affair on KGNU, your community radio station. Welcome to Storytellers of Color, our monthly series airing every second Monday. The series grew from the Journals of Color and Latinx Voices Group trainings offered by the Colorado News Collaborative and also another training here in KGNU called Trends Fellowship, which I completed alongside other local media makers during the COVID pandemic. More than 5 years later, Storytellers of Color continues to provide a safe space where BIPOC storytellers, artists, and community leaders can share their experiences in their own words. I'm your host and producer, Rosana Longo-Better. Here I am, and today we welcome in studios Denver multidisciplinary artist and musician Cipriano Ortega. Cipriano, welcome to the studios.
Good morning.
It's so fun to have you, and it's so fun to have you here at Storytellers of Color. You work across music, theater, poetry, visual art, and also performance, using your creativity to question what society accepts as normal and to also confront what we call colonialism, that right now is so difficult and that divides us all the time, especially divides us people of color. And I think it is on purpose. For our listeners who are meeting you for the first time, how do you introduce yourself?
Well, I'm an expressive human being. I very much enjoy understanding what medium I need to use to enable to give the people what they need in terms of what I want to communicate to them, whether that's with music, theater performance, and obviously with those kind of things. I also think about what kind of production needs to go behind those things. So developing theatrical things as well as visual art and music as well. So those are my main mediums that I use to be able to express myself creatively. So I would say fundamentally, I am an artist by definition, but I'm just a creator. And I really believe in the blessings that we have as human beings to be able to use our hands and our minds to create things and express ourselves and to show other people that they too also can express themselves in these powerful means as well. Because there's many ways that we can resort to express ourselves in a very non-productive way. And I believe art is one of the highest ways we can express ourselves as a species.
It's a code, eh?
Yes.
It's a code. And it's another language too.
Definitely.
I first interviewed you alongside your parents, artists Tony Ortega and Silvia Montero, during the exhibition Tres Voces, Un Corazón at the Boulder Museum of Contemporary Art. Today, we have the opportunity to go deeper and meet the person behind all these creative forms. Cipriano, when we met at BIMOCA, I saw your work in conversation with the art of your parents and with the history of your own family. But today, I would like to begin with you. So before the exhibitions and exhibits and the performances and the music, who was the young Cipriano growing up in North Denver?
Yeah, that was through the 90s. So I was born in 1990. So I grew up throughout those eras and time. And I was an only child. And predominantly, I played with myself. I had some friends as well, too. But I was very much attracted to going outside and playing pretend and dressing up in different costumes and things like that and putting on different characters and also building things out of wood, building things out of Legos, Connects, whatever I could get my hands on. I liked painting. I still enjoy painting, as you can see in the exhibit that's currently on exhibition at the Boulder Museum of Contemporary Art. But I've always been attracted to three-dimensional things. I've always liked tactile things. And so obviously I had a lot of toys as a kid, but also I would make my own toys as well too. My great-great-aunt Pauline would teach me how to make rag dolls. So I basically take materials and put them together and make my little friends. Another big influence for me when I went back to it, thinking about it, was the film Toy Story. And I remember when Toy Story came out, and I just loved the concept of obviously these toys come to life and they have their own little lives of their own. And then they pretend to not be alive when they're around their owners. And then they play with them in that way, too. So I think growing up that way really just taught me how to fill my time and how to fill my time creatively. Because my folks raised me, my parents, Tony Ortega and Sylvia Montero, raised me. I watched a little bit of television. It was a treat to watch cable TV when we were on vacation. I would watch Nickelodeon and Cartoon Network on vacation, and sometimes at my great-great-aunt's place as well, too. But most of the time, it was public television or VHS, things like that. But most of the time, I didn't spend a lot of time in front of the television. It was predominantly just in my playroom, which I used to adoringly call my studio. And one of those playrooms is still my studio now, professionally. So in summation, that's what it was like, just a very loving household. Able to just, anything was a possibility, just to be able to play pretend. And my folks would obviously play pretend with me. My mom was great at being able to go out in the backyard. I remember when we were doing the addition to the studio, one of the first, actually probably the first house on the block to do a new addition to the historical home, we would play Jurassic Park in the backyard because everything was a construction site, laying down foundation and stuff. So I just remember Star Wars and playing Jurassic Park with my mom. And she'd always been, and she's still very encouraging in that way, to just always be able to understand that we live in these realities and these harsh realities that bombard us at times, but we can always use, in a healthy way, escapism to be able to play pretend and contextualize our lives in that way. And I think that's still kind of what I do, is I really create a nice cocoon for myself creatively, and my studio and the people I surround myself with are my saving sanctuary. And I think my childhood really taught me that.
Mm. You also describe yourself as a sociological artist, and your practice moves between painting, theater, poetry, music, and performance. When an idea comes to you, how do you know which artistic language it needs?
I think if it comes to me mainly with words and poetically, I adjust it to see if I can transpose that to music as well, too, since I play, my predominant instrument that I like to play is my two-string slide bass, and I see if I can come up with a riff or just kind of melody that goes around that. And if that doesn't work, then maybe it's a poem. And if it feels like it has more of a story and multidimensional characters, then perhaps it's going to be a play or a short story. Or if I see it more, I call myself, with my own mind, the way I see things, it's a very cinematic mind. So I can see film, or I can see color, or I can see situations or scenes in my brain. I've just always been like that, because another thing after my childhood is going into young adulthood, I got really into film as well, too, with my mom. So we would go to the Mayan Theater and see films all the time. And she really would teach me how to focus on what was being seen and said in theater and also in movies. So I think my brain always kind of goes that way. So I kind of zoom out from that point and be like, okay, what is the most tangible way? And of course, what's great too about being a professional artist is when you receive opportunities and you have a deadline, like I did my play Cheyenne back in 2024, but the script and the concept of that had been around for about 10 years prior to that. But finally, I was like, okay, well, I got to finalize this in a certain draft. And there was probably about 5 drafts after that. So it really is just about refinement, but I think I try to go to the core of what's trying to be communicated. And usually, most of the time right now in my career, it's a song, a song or an album as well, too.
I was curious because I wanted to know, why are you choosing this medium or this other medium? But also, in this case, you also said ones that you feel most balanced when you can use all your talents. Has that relationship between work and life changed?
I think so. I think for me, as an artist, my work is my existence. And any day, every day that I can get up and do my job and also come home and do my second job, which is also my primary job, which is practice my instrument. Now that I've chosen to devote myself to this instrument that I've spent 5 years developing with my good friend Scott Lofquist, who's a wonderful musician and a wonderful luthier who makes guitars, and he's helped me put together all these different two-string slide basses. He didn't look at me in an odd expression when I came to him first, went through his door the first time and said, I want you to make me this two-string slide bass. So I've been obsessed with that instrument for the last 6-7 years. And so coming also from a martial art background, I understand like daily practice and refinement and technique. And that's kind of always what keeps me grounded within the creative realms. And obviously also helps me be able to write songs quicker and more efficiently because I know what I'm doing on the fretboard and things like that. So I think for me, it's always work. And there's definitely parts in my life where I try to allow leisure, But my father and mother are always working as well, too. My father and my mother have always been professional artists ever since I can remember, since I was born. And they've had no choice but to devote themselves to that, and I unwillingly as well, too. So I think I'm willing to always allow myself to work and also allow myself to relax. But it's a practice, and it's, in a way, kind of my religion and my spirituality, because it's something I'm grateful to have within my body, and then I can externalize from my hands and my mind and be able to do it every day. And that's a blessing to me, that I can go to those places and find refuge. So,
and it is a blessing for all of us this morning, KGU and you listeners out there, that we also have the music that Cipriano shared with us. So we're going to be playing, we're going to be listening to some of the creativity. One of the songs that we have here with us is O Cocoa from the album Lolo House. But before we listen, Cipriano, I want you to introduce it in your own words.
Mm-hmm. Firstly, like I said, I play a two-string slide bass, and I remember one night one of the strings broke when I was trying to tune it. But before that, I was playing with this idea. I was eating a chocolate bar as well and kind of just in the zone of thinking about who I am as a brown man and having brown skin and things like that, and having talked to other people about that experience, and just played my one string at the time, one string slide bass, and came up with this riff. And sometimes with songwriting, the songs and the muse just comes to you. And again, it's beyond ego in the sense of you're allowing it to develop itself in that way. And the riff came, and O Coco was born in that regard. Yeah.
Let's listen. Cocoa, I will say. Where did O Coco, O Cocoa, come from? And what should we listen? Explain what are we listening to?
I think for me, it's really fundamentally just re-listening to it now, and I play it a lot when we open as Los Lolos, my band. It's the opening song that we play to the audience. It's an introduction, I think, and it's the first track off of the debut album, Lolo House. And it's also a statement as well, too. I mean, so bittersweet, like the traditional cacao, when you drink it in that way, and the Maya and Aztec and a lot of other indigenous cultures would consume this. It's very ceremonial as well, too. And I like the fact that when we recorded it, me and Brett Batterman, Brett Batterman's my co-producer and drummer on this track, and he also helped record it and produce it together. And also Doug Carmichael, who was the saxophonist, session saxophonist for this as well, too. We all really understood kind of the idea of it. And I showed Brett Batterman on the drums kind of the main riff, a very indigenous riff. And I remember in terms of production stuff, I went to the Brass Armadillo, which is this antique mall over here in Denver. And I bought this big old 28-inch kick drum, basically marching drum from the 1920s. And before I even recorded O Coco, I wanted a very indigenous sound to it. And while this is a 1920s westernized drum, I put on more of a traditional calfskin style head skins on those drums. And also just, that's kind of the core of it for me, was that nice heartbeat and that nice indigenous feel to it as well, too. So while my music, when I tell people that it isn't exactly sometimes directly Latin or indigenous fusion to it, it's within me because I'm Latin indigenous. So my music comes from those roots. And I also want to shout out my mother as well, too, in developing a lot of these songs. She's also my drummer as well, too. And she grew up wanting to be a drummer, but the time period that she was in, both being Latina and a woman, really wasn't allowed to pursue those things. So I'm really grateful that she's allowing herself to come up. She comes up to my studio sometimes and we jam together. And it's one of the things I treasure the most all the time when she comes up. And so, yeah, it's all within that. I think O Coco is just, again, that testament of I'm here, I have brown skin, you have brown skin. Brown is beautiful, and we're very tasty and sexy.
We are.
Yes.
You're listening to Storytellers of Color on KGNU, and this is Rosana Longo-Better speaking with multidisciplinary artist and musician Cipriano Ortega. Cipriano, your band Los Lolos describes its sound as low rock blues, a minimal combination of blues, jazz, and rock featuring your costume two-string side bass. I'm so happy you mentioned it right away because I took pictures of it. I look at it at the Museum of Boulder. And I was like, what is this thing? Yeah. And I would love if you can talk a little bit about this instrument in particular.
Yes.
Like you explained to me at the exhibit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for that question. So first off, there's a band that was in the 90s called Morphine. And they're from Boston, and the lead singer and two-string slide bassist was Mark Sandman. And I heard their music in The Sopranos, the show from HBO. And before that, I had been playing around with the idea of a one-stringed instrument because I just was like, I can play that. I think I can play that. And then I heard Morphine on The Sopranos. And once I heard that instrumentation, a light bulb just went off, and I'm like, that. I always feel like I always go back to the future when I'm like, that's the sound I've been looking for. And that's true. It's the sound I've been looking for. And then I researched on Google Mark Sandman and saw the two-string slide bass and just fell in love with the instrumentation of Morphine. And since that, I really have enjoyed that particular formula. And with that formula, I've developed Los Lolos through these 7 years. And I'm just so grateful to be here in studio to discuss it. And like I said, my friend Scott Lofquist, who builds guitars, he's built guitars for over 40 years, can turn hunks of wood into beautiful instruments just from scratch. And I came to him with this idea, and we've made about 7 versions of this. Different scale lengths, different types of pickups, different types of wood. So one of them is made from actually fiberglass, like Jack White's Airline guitar. That's another big influence for me, is that kind of guitar, but also just Jack White as well, too, and the White Stripes. So I developed that, and I've been playing the one I'm currently playing for about a year now, but that guitar took about 2 years to develop conceptually as well, too. And also currently, my friend Scott's going to be building me a new one. That's going to be another iteration. So it's just been great to be able to have that resource to be able to develop that instrument and just bring it to a new generation. Because again, I'm grateful to Mark Sandman and his innovation for creating such a low frequency slide instrument. And again, going back to the exhibit at BMUCA, I wanted to make a one stringed diddly bow version, which is very much akin to what I play as well too, just to show people they too can do it, because it's a one string with a pickup, or not, you don't even need a pickup. It's just a string, a wire tightened to a certain keynote, and you find a slide and you figure out what to play from it. And I remember too, even before that, I watched this documentary called It Might Get Loud, which has Jimmy Page, The Edge, and Jack White talking about guitar. And the opening scene is Jack White on this porch making a diddly bow. He has the strings, he has a Coke bottle, which he uses as the bridge, and he makes this diddly bow and he plays it. And I remember when I was a little kid, when it came out, I saw that and it always stuck with me. And I think I've always just kind of been obsessed with that minimal approach to instrumentation. I love guitar, I love piano, and I find people who play those instruments better than I do to be featured on my albums and things like that. But the core of it for me, at least right now, is always going to be that two-string slide bass.
So beautiful. I have another song from you that I want to also feature, but I want to make sure, because time flies in this show, that I let you have your last expression here, because Cipriano, we are living through a painful and divided moment. Indigenous, immigrant, queer, Black, and Brown communities are again being asked to defend their dignity, their history, and even their right to belong. Can hardship make an artist more prolific, or it is dangerous to romanticize the idea that our pain must produce something beautiful? Mm. How can you protecting your humanity, how are you protecting your humanity and your creativity in this moment?
I think for me, being Indigenous, Apache, also Latino, Latinx, whatever word you want to attach to it, I'm a brown man in a modern world in 2026, and it's situational. I think for me, sometimes I walk into a room or walk into a scenario and I can feel the tension rise just from assumptions. And I've been quoted to be said to be very intimidating or look intimidating. But at this point, I just embrace all that. My mom has always taught me to just let it shine. And at this point, I just try to protect myself. Like I said, I've studied martial arts. And I bring that up more so to transcend the physicality of it. It's more of the mental practice of, not every day is a battle, but sometimes it feels like that. Sometimes it feels like it's every minute, every second. But you find ways to focus. And for me lately, I've just been thinking about the hardships of my ancestors, my mother, my grandfather, my dad's side of the family, his father and my grandfather. And I just think about how much they would want me to strive and shine and to look forward into the future. And also be grateful that I have parents and a history that can show me that I can use all those things to turn them into gold and let those shine and to show future people and to touch future people and future generations what I've done. And beyond that, too, just to be grateful here, even in this very moment at 8:58 a.m., to be with you, to see how much my art and my music and my history and everybody that I've just mentioned has brought me to this very moment. And to live in that moment and to take it moment by moment when you have to, and play a couple tunes while I'm here on the earth and hopefully record a few more albums.
And I also have to say thank you for trusting us with your music, with your story and your personal experience this morning. And thank you, listeners of Storytellers of Color. This series airs every second Monday of the month, and we're going to go with Los Lolos music and Cipriano Ortega. So again, our guest today was Denver multidisciplinary artist and musician Cipriano Ortega. You can learn more about their virtual visual art performances and music with Los Lolos. And stay tuned for the Rocky Mountain Community Radio Regional Roundup, and followed by another eclectic morning of sound alternative here on your KGNU, your community radio.